Hello and welcome to the urinary tract system part four. This is where the fun begins, the balancing protocols. This is where we all want to just jump right into, but I believe that if we don't really understand the underlying mechanisms and how the systems work, balancing approaches become protocols. They become the one size fits all type of stuff. So I think that we have to understand what's going on, and I'm going to give you some general guidelines for how to balance in each of the conditions related to the kidney and the bladder, but also the overall, what are we doing to get this system in balance? So before we begin, I want to make sure that you're aware that the information in this presentation is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare practitioner. And it's all just education and stuff that I've learned in my 25 plus years of experience in working with lots of patients and in a lot of research. And when you're presenting to people, whether it's one-on-one or in a group, I really think you ought to be able to just do this disclaimer and make sure that they understand that you're offering education, not medical advice. So let's jump in. So the module at a glance, we're in part four, yay. Part one was anatomy and physiology. Part two was assessment. Part three was pathology. And now that we've got that understanding under our belts, and maybe you have to go back through and watch this over and over, but yeah, I got that understanding, at least got an intro to it. And now we're ready to actually look at how do we balance when people are out of balance in their urinary system. So the general guidelines for support of the kidney. Lots of clean, filtered water. Don't want to add more chemicals for the kidney to have to filter. Exercise regularly. Keep moving, sweating, pushing toxins out helps support the kidneys. Decreasing the toxic load, which with pure water, organic food, and fiber, lots of high fiber, high water content foods to bind the toxins and lubricate and hydrate. Alkaline forming foods, because the acids actually can put a lot of strain on the kidneys for having to filter that. And then using caution with medications. While we can't tell people not to use medications at all, because that's against the medical advice, we can inform them about the side effects of certain medications and help them to determine if the medications that they are on are interfering with their functioning and causing some of the symptoms. So what's a supportive lifestyle, a diet for the kidney and bladder? You're not going to be surprised, but spread fluid intake throughout the day. Be well hydrated, half the body weight in fluid ounces, plus about 8 ounces more for every 15 minutes of heavy exercise or sweat. And then drink clean filtered water, clean and filtered. Don't want to add to the kidney's work. However, they're not going to be able to drink filtered water every single time they drink. When they're out, when they're about, carry water with them, ask for bottled water, and at times when they can't, bless it and drink it, because it's better to have a little bit of unfiltered water than to get dehydrated, especially if they already have some kidney and bladder issues or congestive heart failure or high blood pressure or any of that. One of the ways that I like to start people off in the morning to really flush things through is warm water with fresh lemon juice right before breakfast, like maybe a half an hour before breakfast. When drinking water, sip it, don't gulp, because when you gulp, it overloads the kidney's capacity and it doesn't really get absorbed into the cells. Teach them to keep their urine light yellow or almost colorless, and it should be odorless too, and have them report to you if their urine starts to smell, because it's not normal. Get the fluids in fruits, vegetables, and soups. Lots of fluids. It doesn't have to be just water, but fruits, vegetables, and soups. The high water content, especially the uncooked, have lots and lots of good solid hydration. Limit or avoid refined sugar. The sugar interferes with mineral absorption. It affects blood sugar balance, and all of these things can have an impact on the kidneys and bladder. And if there's a high protein intake, extra water. Obviously, it's better to moderate the protein intake, to not exceed the body's ability to use it. And when we eat a lot of protein, there's a lot of nitrogenous waste, and they're very acidic. So moderate the protein intake, find out what the ideal is for their body weight and lean muscle mass, their sex, their height, their weight, and all that, and help them to stay within that range. Because too much protein, contrary to a lot of popular opinion, is not good. It's actually problematic for the body. So what are some of the supplements that you can use to support people who have bladder or kidney weaknesses, who have a history of bladder infections or kidney infections or stones? There are some things that you can do to help them with overall supporting their urinary tract system. And aloe vera juice is very soothing, very healing to mucous membranes. Vitamin B6 and magnesium we've mentioned before as being extremely beneficial for bringing the oxalates and the urates out of the system and helping to prevent the buildup of stones. Chlorella, lots of green, very alkaline forming, loaded with good, easy to absorb and digest protein, and it's a toxin magnet. Some of the kidney cleansing herbs, some of these are diuretics, some not, some are soothing to the kidney and the bladder. Dandelion, a good diuretic, but very supportive of kidney and liver health. Marshmallow root, very mucilaginous and soothing, and actually one of the most excellent things to use in the case of cystitis, especially chronic cystitis. Nettle tea is very helpful. Parsley is a diuretic. Red clover can tend to be diuretic and also soothing. Ginger and turmeric tend to be anti-inflammatory, so can keep the inflammation down. Uva ursi tends to be really supportive of infection in the specific areas of the kidney and bladder. And then juniper berry, which tends to be a kidney tonic, very helpful for the kidney. So does this mean you should give people all of these? No. We should be looking at what's going on and what's the most beneficial. Giving them B6 and magnesium when they're not deficient, not useful. Giving them anti-inflammatories when that's not the issue, if it's not useful, but actually anti-inflammatories can help in almost everything. So those are good ones. There's also some foods that tend to be really specific to supporting the areas of the kidney and bladder. Lemon, celery, cilantro, dandelion, parsley, red clover, sage, ginger, turmeric, watermelon, pumpkin seeds, black currant, cranberry, grapes, spirulina, basil, blueberry, pomegranate, millet, asparagus, and baking soda. And we have a list of references at the end of here where you can look up individual ones. If you know, you find out what their food likes and desires are as well. You're not going to give them every one of these foods, but which ones are more specific for what's going on and which ones are going to be tolerable within their own preferences and their cultural upbringing. So we also want to avoid beverages that impact the kidneys. Caffeinated beverages tend to increase calcium excretion and can lead to stones, and also increases calcium excretion, so it affects the ability of the body to form good structural collagen and bone tissue. They're also bladder irritants. Even decaf coffee has a bladder irritant effect, especially in women. And part of it is the tannins and other things that are very acid forming that are in there. Alcohol causes dehydration by increasing urination. It interferes with the brain signals to the bladder about when to release urine. It affects antidiuretic hormone, and that's important to keep hydration going. So alcohol can be very dehydrating. So I always tell people, if you are going to have a glass of wine, have an extra glass of water to make up for the fluid loss that wine causes. And then carbonated beverages, you know, we mentioned those in relationship to stones, how they can irritate sensitive bladders, but they can also yank on calcium and create a calcium imbalance. And they're very acidic forming. The phosphorus in there throws things off. So I would say all of these things are definitely, I'd say no-nos in general, but especially with somebody with a history of kidney or bladder issues. So foods that impact kidneys and bladders, okay? We talked about some of the the liquids. Carbonated beverages also irritate sensitive bladders, and they're high in phosphorus, so they can lead to kidney stone formation. Spicy and acidic foods can irritate sensitive bladders. Some people have interstitial cystitis where the lining is much more sensitive, and they're very, it's very important for them to avoid things like dairy and gluten and any known allergens. Artificial sweeteners, aspartame and the like, those can be very irritating to the urinary tract system. All forms of sugar, sucrose, fructose, honey, etc., can be aggravating to the kidneys and the bladder. So it should be avoided or at least minimized. And blood sugar imbalance affects it. So it, you know, you can end up with an increase in bladder and kidney irritation because of diabetes and blood sugar insulin resistance type problems. Increase in salt. So many people, we talked about this when it had to do with the kidney stones. It's a risk factor for kidney stones. So avoiding excess salt. I like to keep it in the range of 1,000 to 2,000. I like to see it at more like 1,000 milligrams, but some people go up to 2,000, but keep it low. The average American eats 4,000 to 5,000 milligrams a day. Excess potassium can build up when the kidneys are weak, so avoiding excess potassium supplementation. Potassium is usually more difficult to end up with an excess of just because it's usually outweighed by the salt in people's diets. But, you know, when people start to supplement, got to be careful. And again, on protein, I just can't reiterate enough that it's a strain for the kidneys to excrete excess protein and the nitrogenous wastes that go with it. So let's look at some condition-based approaches to urinary tract imbalances. What are some of the specific foods that have had some good science behind helping to get these things under control? So cystitis. If somebody has an active cystitis, they should be avoiding baths because baths can cause the bacteria to come out and then go back in. So I would avoid baths during for sure and then for a time after to prevent reinfection. Probiotics, super important. And when the bacteria from the colon enters into the urethra as a result of sex, as a result of baths, as a result of just friction and being prone to it, not wiping real well, the bacteria from the colon can get into the urinary tract system through the bladder. And it could be very helpful to have really good flora and really affect that. And I also give people probiotics if they have an active urinary tract infection. One of my favorites is cranberry. Lots of research on cranberry for UTIs and Uva ursi as well. Uva ursi works more in an alkaline environment and cranberry in an acidic environment. So if you're going to take them, I wouldn't necessarily take them together, but they can vary it and just see which one works best for the individual person. Marshmallow and corn silk are very, very soothing. And I like to get people to make teas out of this so that the active constituents can end up in the urine and in the bladder and through the kidneys as well. Vitamin C, very good for creating that acidic environment, but also as a natural antibacterial and anti-inflammatory and immune system booster. Berberine, which is a very good antimicrobial, and also keeps blood sugar in balance, which is important with cystitis. And buchu is another herb that I use in combination with Uva ursi and marshmallow, corn silk, and berberine. There's a really nice combination that I've used from Thorne Research called Urostatin, and buchu's in that one as well. So these are some of the natural management. I will tell you that the experience I've had with people who've been diagnosed with a urinary tract infection and started on the protocols with these herbs and lots of vitamin C have gotten their situations resolved within a few days. Now, even some folks who have been on antibiotics, but then they talk to me about it, they actually start this protocol and go off of the antibiotics and make a clean break and clear it up much more quickly. Now, here's the thing with cystitis. You can take a lot of vitamin C in some of these herbs, and the symptoms will resolve very quickly. You want to make sure the person, number one, keeps on drinking lots of water to flush things through. But number two, don't stop taking the herbs once the symptoms resolve, because the symptoms will resolve before the situation is completely resolved. And if they go back to, you know, not honoring their sleep cycle and stopping the vitamin C in the herbs, then the infection can come back. So I would definitely make sure that it's really clear to them. Healing UTIs in terms of hydration. You definitely want to have them super hydrate. Not just half the body weight in fluid ounces, but a lot more just to keep pushing things through. It's okay to do that temporarily. If you do that long term, you could have them deplete some of their nutrients and excrete them more. But during this period of time, you definitely want this to happen. And the super hydration increases the detoxification pathways, and it creates a pressure that the urine stream is really strong, and that helps to flush some of the bacteria out. So diuretics are good too. So parsley juice increases the urine flow. I love dandelion leaf and burdock root and nettle to reduce inflammation and cleanse. The dandelion is definitely also a diuretic. The raw celery, antibacterial, anti-inflammatory, and an antioxidant. Celery seed increases urine flow, and it can be added to things like dips and dressings and pickled veggies and a lot more. And it's a very pleasant taste as long as you don't do too much of it or grind it. I find that if you grind it up too much, it ends up having a little bit of a bitterness. So have them play with that, or you play with it first. And then juniper berry concentrate prevents the increased proliferation of the bacteria, and it gets rid of a lot of the microbes. It's also very kidney tonic, supports the kidneys. So this should give you some good ideas for those UTIs, especially the people you work with that have them chronically and have had them chronically for most of their lives. It's a problem, and these things work beautifully. Here's another way to flush out the bacteria, the cranberry. Proanthocyanin A is the constituent in there that helps. It prevents bacteria from adhering to the urinary tract surface. So it's an anti-adherent factor, and it regulates urine pH, although it does work better in an acid environment. And then it boosts the macrophages. Macrophages, remember those Pac-Man that gobble up the infections, and it decreases the risk for bacteria in the urine without symptoms. So sometimes people have this chronic low-grade level of bacteria in the urine, but they're not symptomatic, and this helps to decrease that. Apple cider vinegar is a wonderful natural remedy, and the acetic acid in it is antimicrobial and actually can kill resistant bacteria. So having people take some apple cider vinegar, maybe even a quarter cup in a glass of water in the morning, and a couple of tablespoons before each meal, can be very, very helpful in getting rid of some of these resistant bacteria and creating a nice environment for the healthy bacteria to grow and supporting detoxification and immune system function. So definitely something to put in your arsenal for healing UTIs. So D-mannose is a naturally occurring sugar that's found in some foods like apples and blueberries and cranberries. It's also found in aloe vera, and there are supplements that extract it from the aloe vera. It works by grabbing on, latching on to that E. coli, so they can't cling to the bladder wall, and they can get excreted easily. Typical dose, 500 milligrams every 2 to 3 hours for 5 days, and I wouldn't cut that short, because you can start the process just like with antibiotics and then stop it, and the strong ones grow back. So you can take it with cranberry and probiotics as a really nice healing protocol. And there was a clinical trial that had 308 women with a history of recurring UTIs. And this supplementation actually significantly prevented the recurrence and resulted in milder side effects and fewer side effects when compared to antibiotics. So it actually was compared to antibiotics and seemed to be very favorable without throwing off your gut flora and creating imbalances in the gut for months to come. So here's some more for healing UTIs. Nutrients, zinc. Zinc reduces the frequency of urination and pain in children when they have that gotta go, gotta go, gotta go. And this was studied in children. It enhances the recovery of the damaged tissue and prevents kidney problems. Because sometimes what happens is we get what's called a retrograde kidney infection. Somebody who has a lot of bladder infections and isn't careful about getting rid of it, you can cause the bacteria can climb up. And this happens when you don't take care of it. Vitamin C can increase, of course, antibacterial, antimicrobial effects and increase the absorption of bioflavonoids. And bioflavonoids are very helpful, especially quercetin, to break down histamines and inflammatory products, and gives the body what it needs to handle any tissue damage. So if the bladder starts to get damaged by some of these bacteria, the vitamin C will help with that. Here's some more. Here's some actual antimicrobial herbs and foods. Garlic. It's a great source of glutathione. Glutathione can be very helpful, but also it's high in allicin. And allicin enhances detoxification, but allicin also is an amazing antimicrobial. Echinacea stimulates the immune system. Golden seal, berberine, also Oregon grapefruit. It destroys E. coli. It's very effective at destroying E. coli and other bacteria and other kinds of microbes. So even if it's a yeast type of thing or a viral overgrowth in the bladder infection, which is not that common, but definitely can help it. And it can help the gut flora be healthier because it's going to help kill off microbes there, which if they have diarrhea, or they have loose stools, or they just have some bad bacteria in there that migrate. They tend to migrate from the colon into the urethra and into the bladder. This can be very, very helpful. It's also good for Pseudomonas and a bunch of others. One of my favorite books is Herbal Antibiotics by Stephen Breuer. And it's got a lot of really good stuff on particular types of organisms and which of the herbs have been studied and found to be super effective. Grapefruit seed extract, I'm mixed feelings about grapefruit seed extract, as I've heard that there's some, it's not as pure as a pure herb because of the way it's extracted, but it does decrease the growth of staph and Pseudomonas and Klebsiella species, so it can be helpful. I would start with the more obvious ones before and go to that if it doesn't seem to be working. That Urostatin by Thorne tends to work really well. The cranberry and the D-mannose and any of these herbs that you can get people to just incorporate, especially garlic because it's a food. Here's some essential oils that help with healing UTIs. Myrrh, clove, cinnamon, sage, and oregano, and clove and cinnamon done together. The myrrh will suppress inflammation and prevent infection, while the clove and cinnamon have a synergistic effect on inhibiting E. coli, which is the most common bacteria in UTIs. Clove oil has anti-inflammatory properties, and that helps with pain relief. I know if you've ever had problems in the mouth, it's used on the gums for pain relief, and it works really, really well. Cinnamon oil has an effect on the bacteria and inhibits it. So a combination of those together, though. Sage essential oil has been found to significantly inhibit the growth of UTI-causing bacteria like E. coli. And oregano, same thing. It's also very anti-inflammatory, and it upregulates the cytokines, those inflammatory mediators that help us when we need it. And we want to make sure we take oregano separate from probiotics, as oregano oil taken with probiotics tends to have an inhibitory effect on the bacteria in the probiotics. But I've used oregano at the first sign of any kind of infectious process and had good results. So lifestyle changes that help to support and prevent and heal UTIs. Well, empty the bladder before intercourse. And then before and after intercourse, clean the genitals well. Get up and pee right away after to get some of that bacteria, just flushed out. People who don't take this seriously go, I wish I did because I ended up with that infection again. They call it honeymoon cystitis. Not everybody gets it. Some people are more prone to it. But make sure that you're just using pure water or a real sweet essential oil containing soap, not the typical stuff that's on the shelves. So if you have a UTI, if they have a UTI, I recommend that they avoid sex while they have it to avoid re-injuring and also the spread of bacteria. With underwear, cotton is best. fitted but not tight. Friction, heat, and moisture all can lead to increased incidences of UTIs. So these are all just basic hygiene from a preventative standpoint. And then some of the herbs and things were more from a, if you get it. But also some of them can be used prophylactically in people who have chronic cystitis. Here's some other foods to avoid. And it shows the normal bladder surface and the interstitial cystitis. Alcohol, caffeine, acidic foods, carbonated beverages, sugar, and grains, because they all feed yeast. This is a summary of what we talked about earlier. Here's some foods for the management of interstitial cystitis. Interstitial cystitis is generally caused by an allergic and inflammatory kind of situation. So you see the normal bladder surface, you see what it looks like in interstitial cystitis. So things just bother it and hurt it, the acids and the foods and the caffeine and all that, but also things that help and support it are all our fermented foods. Find the ones that they like, find the ones that work for them and try it. Sauerkraut, kimchi, pickles, apple cider vinegar, coconut water, kefir, fermented herbal botanicals. There's so many ways to get the fermented foods in and find the ones that are going to work for them. And then coconut oil tends to be really helpful in managing interstitial cystitis. Coconut oil or whole coconut, you know, blend it up. I use a lot of the dried coconut and turn it into a coconut butter and use that and making dressings and sauces and all, because they contain lauric acid and caprylic acid, and they both have antimicrobial properties. And then here's some other herbal stuff for the management of interstitial cystitis. I recommend high dose probiotic supplementation, not these wimpy little 15, 20, 30, even 50, over 100 billion, and preferably more, at least for a while. If someone is suffering from something like SIBO, or they get bloated from too much probiotic, switch to a D-lactate-free probiotic or just use Bifidobacter for a while. Yeah, the diverse strain works, but you have to go slowly with people who have sensitivities to probiotic foods. And then there's antifungal herbs, and they tend to work in there. So I'm not sure the exact mechanism, but garlic, ginger, turmeric, onion, and oregano have all been studied to have positive effects with managing interstitial cystitis. You have to get them off the allergens. You have to identify their allergens, do an elimination diet, start with the top six, the gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, and peanuts, and then move from there and work with them on what their particular ones are, or identifying them. So kidney stones, how do we approach kidney stones? I have worked with people with kidney stones, helped them to pass them without as much pain with the use of some of these herbs and foods. So of course it goes without saying, lots of water, limit fructose, avoid high dose vitamin C because that can create some stones. There's some mixed feelings about where and how much, but it's general, if they have it, make sure you tell them this because you don't want to get your hands slapped for telling them that they could take vitamin C and then they end up with a problem. Lemon and lime in the water, apple cider vinegar is fine too. Look at low oxalate diets, you know, just kind of don't go crazy with it because people can go nutty with low oxalate diets and then they limit so many good foods. But just try slowly, you know, reducing, changing, and seeing if it makes a difference. But certainly during the kidney stones, while you're trying to get rid of them, you should. And the B vitamins, especially B6 and magnesium, are really good at helping to decrease the amount of uric acid and oxalic acid. Kidney supporting herbs can be very helpful. And stinging nettle, 1 to 2 cups of infusion daily for 10 to 12 weeks really has been found in studies to be worthwhile. Goldenrod, which is also another source of berberine, and a bearberry, aka Yuva ursi. So all of these things can help support the kidney. And you want to improve gut motility. Make sure that they've got the good motility. They're not getting constipated, that they're not reabsorbing toxins in their gut, which is then putting a stress and strain on the kidney. Potassium citrate can be helpful as long as they don't overdo it. I usually go for about 99 milligrams a day. Optimizing vitamin D, which is so important for wherever we have mucous membranes and wherever there's inflammation. And then, of course, with kidney stones, you want to make sure that you limit exposure to the foods that create the
the stone formation, and animal proteins, which are acid forming, but also high in purines and glycine and methionine, which tend to be predisposing factors for kidney stones. Glycine has been shown to be metabolized into oxalate, and methionine can increase urinary calcium. So with the methionine, you know, wanting to make sure you don't get too much of the animal proteins, but also, you know, if they've got to have some good methylation going on, because we need the methyl groups to convert the methionine to SAMe. And also be very careful with the bone broth and the bone broth craze, and everybody's trying that, but bone broths tend to be high in glycine. So I'd be careful about some of these things in people who have a kidney stone or have a tendency, have had a history of that. A lot of these things are good for folks, whether they have the situation right now or not, in preventative, in people who have a history of recurring cystitis or recurring kidney stones. So citric acid, you know, there's a mechanism by which that helps. That's why lemon, lime, and apple cider vinegar are good. Major antagonists to the calcium-based stones. They chelate, they hang on to the calcium and help it to excrete without forming a stone. It combines well with potassium and magnesium helps to draw some of these things out. I would use fresh squeezed rather than buying it in a bottle. Some of that stuff that's in a bottle has been pasteurized, and it has much, much less impact. And it makes the urine less acidic. It's kind of surprising because there's citric acid, but the urine actually ends up being less acidic. It's an alkalizing type of foods in spite of what they feel like going in. And it decreases the potential to form stones and increases the urine pH and decreases the concentration of undissociated uric acid, the stuff that's floating around just waiting to lap on and create stones. So these are all really good approaches, and you've got these. I recommend you print out the slides and use these kind of approaches in your working with people. So here's a low oxalate diet, an example. If they have a history of calcium oxalate kidney stones and they have a genetic tendency, susceptibility, and you'll look that stuff up in the genetic charts and see if they've done it. And if they don't, you don't have genetics on them, then and they have a history of calcium oxalate, then you can do a trial of a low oxalate diet. Doesn't mean no oxalate, it just means lower oxalate. Beer, chocolate, nuts, spinach, chard, strawberries, some of the teas, beets, and wheat germ. So there's a lot of foods on this list. So how do kidney stones relate to fructose and the nutrients? What should we be doing here? So with fructose, it's linked with increased excretion of calcium oxalates and uric acid, which means that those stones are going to form. Vitamin B6 and magnesium increases the excretion of the oxalic acid and the uric acid in the gut before it gets there. Vitamin C metabolism produces oxalate, so be careful with that. Some studies link it to increased risk of stones. There are more conclusive studies that vitamin C is recommended if it's accompanied by high levels of B6 and naturally binds the oxalate. So it's just, you know, half a dozen, six, what's that, six of one, half a dozen of another, like making sure that we have enough B6 and magnesium, playing with the vitamin C if it's infectious kind of thing, but being careful with it. And then there's a process that helps to break them down at the onset of kidney stone symptoms. 2 ounces of extra virgin olive oil with 2 ounces of organic lemon juice, undiluted. And then after it, you want to drink 12 ounces of purified water. Wait 30 minutes and then mix another half lemon and a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar in 12 ounces of water and drink that throughout the day. And this helps to soften. There's other things, malic acid in apple juice or malic acid as a supplement helps to dissolve the stones, but also chancre piedra is another herb that's not as widely available or known, but it's a good one for breaking down stones. The other thing I've done is I've used digestive enzymes in between meals as metabolic enzymes in high doses, 4 to 6 to 8 in between meals. Be careful with proteolytic enzymes, which do a great job of breaking down stones, but also if somebody has ulcers or an aggravated GI tract, the proteolytic enzymes can actually break down the walls and can cause irritation. So just be careful and check, test it out with small doses. Calcium binds the oxalate in the bowels
and prevents it from entering circulation to be filtered by the kidneys. B6 and magnesium tend to do the same. When we have a calcium deficiency, it can lead to increased oxalate in the kidney. Oxalate is 15 times stronger than calcium in creating the formation of calcium oxalate stones. So it's not so much avoiding calcium, which a lot of people think. Adequate calcium in low oxalate vegetables like cabbage and cauliflower can be super, super helpful. Arugula is another low oxalate. And the curly kale tends to be higher oxalate, whereas the dinosaur or Jacinto kale tends to be lower. Vitamins D3 and K2 work in synergy to modulate the calcium metabolism. So I'd make sure that vitamin D, the optimal vitamin D, is maintained in the blood, which 60 to 100, 75 to 100 would be good. And then the K2 can be gotten through fermented foods and supplements, and especially natto, a very good source of K2, MK7. So these are all things that you can do to keep the balance going and help them to prevent stones. With uric acid stones, it might be a little bit different. The purine-rich foods tend to be organ meats, liver, beef, poultry, pork, eggs, fish, and legumes. The high oxalate foods tend to more towards the greens and some of the nuts and seeds. Fructose is high fructose. Corn syrup, honey, agave, all of these things are high in fructose and can be problematic with uric acid type kidney stones, and of course alcohol, which we've mentioned before. But foods that can help are green leafy vegetables, low sugar fruit, rich antioxidant foods, antioxidant rich foods, and then some of the diuretics, which we mentioned earlier, like celery and dandelion and parsley. I recommend keeping the fructose intake ideally 10-ish grams a day, 10 to 15, but you know, up to 20 at the most. And this fructose comes naturally occurring in foods. I don't recommend any that's not naturally occurring. So let's look at kidney infections. How do we manage them? They're much more difficult to manage. And when I had a kidney infection, it was like 18 years ago, I was troubled because I couldn't find anything in any of my herbal books that talked about what do you do for a kidney infection. I mean, there is some stuff around, but it's not as prolific as what you do for cystitis. So I came up with some of these things, and I'll also tell you a little bit more about some of the herbs that I use that are also good for the bladder infection. So apple cider vinegar, the malic acid, prevents the oxidative damage to the kidney, and it's also good for, you know, kind of stone, pulling out stones, breaking down stones. Cranberry juice increases the urine acidity, and it's the anti-adherent factor, right? It latches onto the E. coli and doesn't let them attach to the bladder wall. Parsley, a diuretic, flushes out the toxins and organisms. And garlic, we talked about that before in terms of cystitis, and it applies with kidney infections too. It's diuretic, and it forces the kidney to pass more salt and toxins in the urine. It's antipathogenic, the allicin in there, very good for bacterial and viruses as well. But here's the thing. We want to make sure that we're really well hydrated and that we're eating and drinking and taking in a lot of these natural diuretic foods, but also antimicrobial rich foods. We have a chart in our digestive module on all the antimicrobial nutrients and foods and herbs. And things like turmeric and ginger, you can't go wrong with those, right? Because of the anti-inflammatory, but things like berberine containing things, golden seal, golden rod, Oregon grape, all of these can be super, super helpful with any kind of infection, including kidney infection. What I did when I had a kidney infection is I did some of these. I didn't do the cranberry juice. I did parsley. I did made juices. I fasted for several days and just drank juices. I used the garlic. I also used things like the stuff that's good for cystitis I used. I used some Uva Ursi. I used some berberine. I was just giving myself tons of stuff plus tons of vitamin C, and I managed to break it. It took 4 days. Had a high fever for 4 days, but I managed to break it and then got acupuncture and everything resolved and never got one since. So here's a bunch of herbs that support the kidneys. Goldenrod, bearberry, and nettle. Goldenrod's used a lot in Europe to treat inflammation and prevent kidney stones. And then it's also a key ingredient in many of the traditional teas that help flush the kidneys and stones and stop inflammatory diseases of the urinary tract. I tend to be more in favor of using herbs as liquids with urinary tract, making them into teas or using tinctures and putting them in water or warm water. Bearberry is really uva ursi, and it helps to reduce the accumulation of uric acid. It also helps with kidney infection and any kind of infection. So it strengthens the urinary tract passages. It contains a substance called allantoin, which helps to soothe, straighten, and tighten irritated inflamed tissue. So that's one of the reasons it's good. Nettle is super rich in minerals. It also contains plant sterols and lignans and flavonoid antioxidants to help support inflammation and irritation, and helps to support the bladder and kidney walls, as well as being an overall amazing herb to be taking on a regular basis. I have nettle, I have dried nettles, and I grind them down to a powder and add them to smoothies and soups and sauces and things like that. Nettle has been found to help prevent and treat kidney stones. So let's now talk about glomerulonephritis, which is an autoimmune disease. So an autoimmune approach helps, which is healing leaky gut, get rid of toxins, manage stress, all that. But also, it helps to restrict sodium, protein, potassium, and fluids. And definitely an alkalizing and anti-inflammatory diet. So you can come up with an alkalizing diet, put the anti-inflammatory foods and herbs in there, limit carbohydrates because that causes the blood sugar swings. Adding good fats like EPA and DHA can be very supportive. Garlic, coconut. Coconut oil is written there. Also coconut itself. I'm mostly a fan of a lot of whole food plant-based fats, but coconut oil can be very helpful therapeutically. And then the ginger and healing leaky gut and managing stress. These are all typical approaches to autoimmune. Here's some herbal remedies that have been found to be useful for nephritis and inflammation in the kidneys. So astragalus, Romania, prepared Romania, wild yam, nettle seed, salvia, asparagus, holy basil, tulsi, ginger, turmeric, and homeopathic aconite can be helpful remedies for nephritis. So you'd look these up and see which ones are native to a person's area, which ones they may not have an aversion to, because they may have an aversion to some stuff that they've tried and didn't like. So let's now talk about natural management of incontinence. Obviously, we want to get to the root cause. The root cause, what is it? Is it an interstitial cystitis, an aggravation of the wall from food allergies? Is it weakness of the bladder walls? Estrogen is super important for that. And it goes down when we hit menopause. So the estrogen goes down and that could cause problem. Blueberries and cranberries have really good structural help support. Their specific constituents. Magnesium reduces bladder spasms. Vitamin D supports the mucous membrane health. Of course, avoid the aggravants, caffeine, alcohol, artificial sweeteners, tobacco. Drink half body weight in fluid ounces of water every day, and do it spread out throughout the day. Avoid bladder irritating foods and beverages, and that includes the caffeine and carbonated sodas. Exercise at least 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, can be super helpful in doing Kegel exercises to strengthen the pelvic floor muscles. The other thing is estriol as a cream can be applied to the urethral opening, and that's been shown to be very helpful as well. So what are some herbs that have been traditionally used for incontinence? Well, buchu, we talked about that as being very supportive of the bladder and the structure. Cleavers, very good immune support. It's a lymph drainer, so can be helpful. Horsetail, very good for structure, very good for building good collagen support. Corn silk, very soothing to the lining. Ganoderma lucida, that's reishi mushroom, very supportive of the immune system. Here's one. It's a blend of 10 traditional Chinese medicine herbs. Gosha,
Jinky Gan. It's been studied and shown to be helpful. Probably be able to get that at a, if there's an acupuncture school that has a clinic area or a store, a dispensary area, might be able to get it there, or look for that at some of the herbal dispensaries and companies that make herbal blends. Capsaicin can be helpful. You got to be careful and make sure that there's not too much and that it doesn't aggravate and irritate. And then pumpkin seed extract. All of these things have been found to be useful for supporting incontinence. So there's also some homeopathics. I'm not a super expert in homeopathics, but I do like to have a few under my belt. I like the Materia Medica. I have a Materia Medica so I can look symptoms up and then look for the right remedy based on not just the one symptom, but what other things are included as well. So you'd look up these remedies, and I'd look it up and get a good Materia Medica and find out what other symptoms this person might be having or other personality traits, because that plays into the homeopathics as well. So causticum for stress incontinence, especially with retention from holding the urine and frequent urges to urinate. And there's a lot more. This is just a little short description. Natrum muriaticum is for stress incontinence, vaginal dryness, and pain during sex, especially with a history of grief. Pararia for retention of urine from an enlarged prostate. So obviously, that's for the guys. Sepia for stress incontinence with a sudden urge to urinate, especially with prolapsed uterus and vaginitis. And a lot of women experience prolapsed uterus over time, especially if they've had multiple babies. Zincum is for stress incontinence, urinary retention from prostate problems, and the inability to urinate while standing. So that's for the guys. So there's two of them for the guys, and the rest are kind of neutral. Natrum mercuricum would be more for women. So here's some references. I've got two pages of references for you, and this is good stuff. Like some of these, I've mentioned herbal antibiotics. There's also other articles and various things you can look up if you want to find out more and more in detail. And that's concludes our healing protocols or strategies for helping people to support their urinary tract system, to keep their urinary tract system healthy and happy, and also to prevent recurrences if they have a history. And there's some things in here that can help if they have an issue. So make sure it's all given in the education realm. And this concludes our entire urinary tract module. Thanks for being here.